Without looking back, Preacher loped off in the direction of where he and Crazy Bear had left their horses the night before. He didn't see any sign of the enemy as he moved swiftly through the timber. It took him only about 15 minutes to find the horses, which were right about where they'd been left. He moved slowly as he led the animals back toward the canyon. A little less than an hour after leaving Crazy Bear and Mala, he reached the canyon. The mouth of the canyon was narrow, about 50 feet wide, and its sides were sheer. The canyon penetrated about a quarter mile into the mountainside before it took a sharp turn and ended abruptly against a rock wall. The women and girls were gathered just around the bend. Crazy Bear and Mala came out to meet Preacher. Any trouble?
The men who are left have not found us yet, but they will. These women give no thought to concealing their trail.
I don't reckon most of them know how to, even if they thought about it. Well, it's all right. You let those sons of bitches follow us. We'll be ready for them when they get here.
And what do you plan to do?
The sun flooded the canyon with light as Preacher pointed up to a narrow ledge that ran along one wall all the way to the canyon mouth, ending at a tall, narrow spire of rock.
I'm gonna climb up there, be waiting for them when they come charging in. You and Mala will be down here with rifles, putting up just enough of a fight so they'll think you and I are both trapped in here with the women. As soon as they're right under me, I'm gonna drop that tall rock on them. The ones that don't get, I'll introduce to Mr. Samuel Colt.
This plan might work, but how will you budge that rock?
I figure I can snap it off at the base if I get my feet on it and my back against the canyon wall.
I hope so.
You cannot move the rock by yourself. It's mad.
Well, I don't see any other way to do it.
You and Crazy Bear both go up there.
I need Crazy Bear down here to handle one of the rifles. I'm counting on you to use the other one.
Mala turned and pointed to the women.
One of them can use the other rifle. I'm sure that someone among them can fire a gun.
Well, it would be easier with both of us up there, I reckon.
Wait here.
Mala went to talk to the women.
She likes to give orders.
Preacher had seen the open admiration in the eyes of Crazy Bear and Mala as they looked at each other, and he thought it was a good thing. Evidently, she didn't care that the big galoot was ugly as sin, but if it was going to amount to anything, they all had to get out of there safely first. Mala returned with a middle-aged woman who had a weathered face and strands of gray in her brown hair.
This is Mrs. Harris. She can shoot a rifle.
I was raised on a farm in Ohio. I could knock a squirrel out of a tree at 50 yards by the time I was 10 years old.
I don't doubt that a bit, ma'am.
Preacher got Crazy Bear's flintlock from where it was slung on the back of the chief's pony and handed it to her, along with powder horn and shot pouch.
There you go.
He gave Mala his rifle and ammunition. Crazy Bear slung a bow and a quiver of arrows on his back. The two of them waited until Mala and Mrs. Harris had taken positions behind some rocks where they could cover the canyon mouth. Then, Preacher and Crazy Bear began to climb the rugged wall that formed the back end of the canyon. Preacher reached the ledge first. After hauling himself onto the ledge, he stretched out a hand to grasp Crazy Bear's wrist and pulled the chief onto it. When they both had solid rock under their feet again, they worked their way along the ledge toward the canyon mouth and the rock spire. Once there, they hid behind the towering rock and waited. The sun was high enough to heat up the ledge, and sweat trickled down Preacher's face and back. But they didn't have to wait very long. Preacher spotted movement on the hillside below the canyon and silently pointed it out to Crazy Bear. Chief nodded. Men were working their way through the trees. He and Preacher crouched lower and didn't move again. With eyes narrowed against the sun's glare, Preacher recognized Clint Mayhew, one of his brothers, the outlaw called Lupton, and Red Moccasins. The four of them were accompanied by four more outlaws and half a dozen of Red Moccasins' warriors, 14 in all. A grim smile touched Preacher's lips. The stampede and the battle the night before had wiped out more of the enemy than he had realized. Two of Red Moccasin's warriors hurried forward carrying flintlock rifles and started through the opening. One warrior stumbled and clutched at his side.
Go! Get in there before they can reload!
The men charged toward the canyon opening, confident they could overwhelm the defenders. It was time to spring the trap. Preacher and Crazy Bear lodged their backs against the stone wall and lifted their feet so they were braced against the rock spire. Down below, the warriors were almost at the canyon mouth. Right behind them came Lupton Mayhew and the other white killers. Preacher felt the rock shift slightly under his feet. Preacher was inspired to even greater efforts. Although he didn't quite have Crazy Bear's immense strength, his rangy form packed plenty of power. Together, the two men pushed against the rock. And suddenly, the spire was gone. Preacher drew his Colts and waited for the morning breeze to clear the dust away. He saw that the spire had shattered into a thousand pieces when it landed. Men stumbled around the debris in a daze.
You son of a bitch!
Before Lupton could fire, Preacher's right-hand dragoon blasted. Red Moccasin threw his lance at Crazy Bear, who knocked it aside with his bow. Crazy Bear dropped the bow and leaped off the ledge as he yanked out a knife. Crazy Bear crashed into Red Moccasin's, and both men went down. Preacher was busy trading shots with Clint Mayhew.
Preacher, you bastard! I should have known it was you!
Preacher saw Mala standing behind Mayhew with a rifle at her shoulder, smoke still curling from its barrel. Before Preacher could call down his thanks to her, she lowered the rifle and rushed forward. Preacher saw that Red Moccasins was on top of Crazy Bear and about to plunge a knife into the Crow Chief's chest. Preacher couldn't fire because Mala was in his way. Mala reversed the rifle, and grasping it by the barrel, she swung it like a club. The shooting had stopped. Preacher quickly made his way down to the floor of the canyon. Crazy Bear lumbered upright. Mala ran to him. For a second, Preacher thought she was going to throw her arms around Crazy Bear, but she stopped herself and stood looking up at him.
You are all right?
Crazy Bear nodded and smiled. He was still ugly as hell, Preacher thought, but the smile helped a little. They rode out that afternoon, leaving the grisly scene behind them, and made camp that night several miles away. The question remained, what were they going to do with 25 women and girls who no longer had families and found themselves hundreds of miles from civilization?
Seems to me there's only one answer.
Preacher spoke to Crazy Bear and Mala as they sat beside their campfire that evening, having made a meal on the supplies they'd found in the outlaw's saddlebags.
I'll take y'all back to the Oregon Trail. There are wagon trains coming along there every week or so at this time of year, so shouldn't be long before you can catch one and head on west. I think you're gonna like Oregon better than you would in Montana anyway. It's a lot more settled.
You will not guide the women alone. I will come with you.
Preacher shrugged. Crazy Bear had his own people to lead back in the Bighorns, but he supposed the village could get by without him for a while longer. Mala explained everything to the other women, who were happy to go along with the idea. Some of them would have a hard time putting their ordeal behind them, but a new life in Oregon would be a start. The whole party left the next morning, riding south. Preacher wouldn't have been surprised if they ran into more trouble along the way, but for once that didn't happen. They reached the North Platte River and the landmark known as Independence Rock a week later. Preacher looked at the deep wagon ruts alongside the stream, and he knew it was only a matter of time until more immigrants came along. Crazy Bear stayed that night, but the next morning he went to Preacher.
It is time for me to go.
I know. You have responsibilities you need to take care of.
But I will not be going alone.
Preacher glanced toward the spot where Crazy Bear's pony waited. Another pony stood beside it, with Mala holding the reins.
Oh, she's going with you, is she? Well, I can't say as I'm surprised. Well, you two been looking at each other all along. So she won't mind living in a crow village from now on?
She says she wants to be with me, and I want to be with her. What more is there in life?
Yeah, I reckon you're right about that.
Preacher held out his hand. Crazy Bear had saved his life, and they had fought side by side. Those things created a bond that could never be broken. They clasped hands.
If you ever need my help, Crazy Bear, you let me know, I'll come running.
And the same is true for you, my friend.
Mala ran over and threw her arms around Preacher's neck, hugging him tightly in farewell.
Oh, thank you for everything. Without you, none of us would be here.
You held your own in that fight. I reckon you did even more than your share. You'll make a good wife for a warrior, right enough. I just hope the young'uns take after you when it comes to their looks, not their paw.
The mention of children brought a blush from Mala, which surprised Preacher a little. He would have thought she was too bold to blush, but he had long since learned that gals were an infinite source of surprises.
I meant what I said, Crazy Bear. You need me, you put the word out. It'll find me.
Farewell, Preacher.
So long. Live a happy life. And I reckon that's what they done for the most part. Had a little trouble from time to time, the way most folks do, but they're still together all these years later.
That's right. I can vouch for that.
So can I.
Smoke watched the trees in front of the cabin. He could not shake the feeling that Bannerman's hired guns were gonna try something again. Waiting for nightfall made more sense, but while he was shooting it out with them during the last attack, Smoke had caught a glimpse of a man he recognized. Lou Torrance was a top man with a gun, one of the best on the frontier. He'd been pointed out to Smoke once in a saloon in Santa Fe, though they hadn't met. Smoke wasn't surprised that Bannerman had hired a cold-blooded, efficient killer like Torrance. Movement in the trees caught Smoke's eye. He knew whatever they were up to wasn't anything good.
Those varmints are stirring again.
Ain't nothing going on back here.
It's quiet on this side, too.
What the hell?
Something big loomed in the trees. It came into view through a gap in the growth and looked so odd for a second, Smoke couldn't figure out what he was looking at. Then he recognized it as a flatbed wagon that probably had been fetched from Reese Bannerman's ranch. Someone had built a wall on the front that rose a good 6 feet straight up behind the driver's seat and extended from one side of the wagon to the other. Rifle barrels protruded from 3 holes that had been cut in the wall. The wagon didn't have a team hitched to it. The tongue had been lifted, hinged back, and tied to the wagon so that it wouldn't gouge into the ground in front of the vehicle. It began to move, which meant men were behind it, pushing it slowly but steadily toward the cabin.
What's going on?
The damnedest thing you've ever seen. They're bringing their own cover with them. They've made a rolling wall out of a wagon.
Smoke raised his Winchester. Splinters flew from the places where the slug struck the boards, but Smoke doubted if any of them penetrated. He figured that wall was several layers thick. Matt went to one of the loopholes in the front wall and took a look for himself.
Holy cow! How in blazes are we gonna stop a thing like that?
I don't know.
Preacher, get out of the line of fire or the door. Matt, cover me! That blasted thing can't move without somebody pushing.
You got it, Smoke.
Together, they grabbed the bar holding the door closed and tossed it aside. Smoke went low, throwing himself onto his belly at the threshold. Matt fired around the edge of the door, pouring lead at the hidden riflemen to keep them distracted. From that angle, Smoke could look under the wagon and see all the way to the legs of the men who were pushing it. Smoke's bullet smashed ankles, shattered shins, tore through calves. Smoke shots knocked their legs right out from under them, and the wagon lurched to a halt. It had covered only half the clear distance between the trees and the cabin. As Busted Leg spilled the men behind the buckboard onto the ground, Smoke had even better targets. The four men who'd been standing in the wagon bed gave up the fight. They leaped from the vehicle and made a dash for the timber. Smoke rolled out of the doorway and into the cabin as bullets from the trees began to kick up dirt not far in front of his face. Matt slammed the door and dropped the bar back into place.
Well, that didn't work out too well for him. That was mighty fast thinking on your part, Smoke, firing under the wagon like that.
It was the only way to get at any of them.
What do you reckon they'll do next?
There's not much telling. We've managed to whittle down the odds considerable. They'll be a lot more careful from here on out, even with Lou Torrance egging them on.
Torrance? I've heard of him. He's supposed to be a really bad hombre.
He is. I don't know if Bannerman has him bossing that bunch, but it's possible. Or maybe Torrance is just one more gun wolf. Bannerman seems to have plenty of them.
Varmints like that put me in mind of flies buzzing around a big, steaming pile of buffalo dung. There's always more where they came from.
Which would make Reese Bannerman that pile of buffalo dung, I suppose.
Now you said it, youngster, not me. Hard to fool the fly, though.
Smoke ran his tongue over dry lips. None of them had mentioned how thirsty they were, nor would they. Their canteens were on their saddles, their horses somewhere in the vicinity. Before taking shelter in the cabin, they had turned the animals loose, swatting their rumps and yelling so the mounts would gallop off out of the line of fire. Smoke knew that he, Matt, and Preacher wouldn't have any trouble finding them later. All they had to do was get out past the guns of those hardened killers first.
I recall the first time I met Crazy Bear. You had told me about him, Preacher, but just hearing about him doesn't really prepare anybody for meeting him in the flesh.
Oh, ain't that the truth. But you run into his boy first, didn't you?
That's right, not far from here. In fact, over at Buffalo Flat, that's where I met Sander. It was years ago, a mighty bad time in my life.
Hatred filled the heart of the young man who rode a big Appaloosa into the settlement of Buffalo Flat, Wyoming Territory, at the southern end of its main street. Sometimes that hatred burned so hot it seemed on the verge of erupting like flames from his brown eyes. At other times, it was a cold hate, like ice had coated the expressionless face and would never thaw again. The important thing about that hatred was it didn't leave room inside him for the pain he would otherwise feel. Richards, Potter, Stratton. Those were the names of the men Smoke Jensen intended to kill. The men who had taken away everything that meant anything to him. The men responsible for the deaths of Smoke's wife, Nicole, and his son, Arthur. As well as the baby's namesake, the old mountain man named Preacher. They had taken it all from him, and he would take everything from them. His only regret was that the worst he could do was kill him. Smoke rode straight in the saddle like a cavalryman. His brown, broad-brimmed Stetson was pulled low over his face. Ash-blonde stubble sprouted on his jaw. He had already cropped his hair close to his skull and was thinking about growing a beard to change his appearance even more. After all, he was a wanted man. There was a $10,000 reward on his head because those lying bastards had made him out to be an outlaw and killer, like he'd committed their sins. Smoke reined Seven toward a hitch rail in front of a big false-fronted building with a sign that read Hammond's Emporium. Before he could get there, the door suddenly opened and a man burst out, running onto the high porch that also served as a loading platform. Smoke realized an instant later that the man was being forced to run. Right behind him, gripping the back of his belt and his coat collar, another man was shoving him forward. When they reached the edge of the porch, the man doing the pushing stopped short and gave his hapless victim an extra shove. Smoke reined Seven to a halt when he saw what was happening. He sat there impassively as two more men emerged from the building and joined the one who'd done the throwing.
Funniest thing I ever saw, Mitch. I swear that engine looked like he was trying to fly the way he was flapping his arms around.
Didn't do no good, did it? He still done belly flop right in that pile of horse shit.
A short, slender, middle-aged man with a massive mustache drooping over his mouth edged out of the open door onto the porch.
He hadn't quite got around to paying me for that new suit yet, boys, and I reckon it's ruined now.
The two spectators instantly lost their air of joviality, and they turned to the store's proprietor.
What are you bothering us about, Hammond?
The man, who wore a black leather vest over a red shirt and a black hat to go with his black chaps, crowded the apron to storekeeper and poked him in the chest with a rigid forefinger.
Yeah, you better run on back into your hole like the little rat you are.
The first man, who was tall, lean, and hatchet-faced, carried himself with the air of a leader. He turned, took a bill from the pocket of his whipcord trousers, stepped past his companions, and tucked the money into the top of the storekeeper's apron.
There's your payment for the damn suit, Hammond. Mr. Gerard always pays his bills. So do the men who work for him. More than you deserve for letting a filthy redskin shop in your store.
He's got just as much right to come in here as anybody else.
He's got a right to come in, and we've got a right to throw him out on his ass.
Ho-ho, I say we throw old Hammond here on his ass, too. Throw him right down there in the shit next to that redskin.
I'd be obliged if you'd leave that man alone.
What the hell did you say, mister?
I said I'd be obliged if you'd leave him alone. He looks like he runs a store, and I need to buy some supplies.
What hole in the woods did you crawl out of?
Smoke lifted the reins in his left hand and nudged Seven closer to the hitch rail. When he got there, he turned the Appaloosa alongside the rail so that Seven was between him and the men on the porch while he swung down from the saddle.
Stranger's got a point, boys.
What? You gonna let him get away with talking to us like that, Mitch?
Can't interfere with the workings of commerce. That wouldn't be right at all. Now come on, let's go up the street to the birdcage. I'm buying.
His two companions didn't like it, but a free drink was a free drink and not something to be refused. They cast dark, murderous glares at Smoke. Then they went to the end of the porch, down the steps, and started along the boardwalk toward the saloon. Hammond came to the edge of the high porch.
You don't know who those fellas are, do you, mister?
No, and they don't know who I am either, so I reckon we're even.
Smoke had gotten a pretty good look at the Indian while the man was flying through the air, even though the glimpse had been a brief one. The man was young, probably no more than 20, and even if the hard cases hadn't mentioned him being an Indian, Smoke would have known it from the black hair and eyes, the high cheekbones, and the coppery skin. Since it was not common to find an Indian wearing a town suit, a white shirt with a stiff collar and a tie, and store-bought shoes, Smoke felt curiosity stirring inside him. He stepped over to the young man's side and reached down to take hold of his arm.
Let me give you a hand, friend. You're going to need a change of clothes, because that suit may have to be burned. You have another one like it?
Yeah.
Bring it out the back. You probably don't want this fella going through the store the way he is now.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But I gotta get paid this time.
You got paid for this suit. I saw that hombre called Mitch give you the money. This fella must have the cost of a suit with him, or he wouldn't have been buying one in the first place, now would he?
No, I reckon not. What you say makes sense, young fella. I'll meet you around back in a few minutes if you'll help Little Bear back there.
Come on.
They went along the alley beside the store, the young man still stumbling some. When they reached the back of the store, Smoke saw several empty crates on the ground. He upended one.
Here, sit down before you fall down. Are you hurt? The way you keep stumbling around, maybe you busted something when you landed in the street.
I'm all right. I just...
The man pawed at damp eyes with the back of a hand. Smoke realized those weren't tears of pain. The youngster was crying because he was so mad. It was fury that caused him to shake.
Better take it easy. Hammond called you Little Bear? Is that your name?
Hey!
A barrel-chested man strode toward him, glowering angrily. A lawman's badge glittered where it was pinned to his vest.
What can I do for you, Sheriff?
It's Marshal. Marshal Thad Calhoun. I'm the law in Buffalo Flat. Now, what's this I hear about a run-in you had with Mitch Thor and Earl Ballew and Gus Harley?
It wasn't much of a run-in. I asked them to leave the storekeeper alone, and they did it.
Thorne's killed men for less, damn it.
He didn't try to kill me.
Well, you're just damn lucky.
Somebody is, anyway.
What do you mean by that, mister?
Before Smoke could answer, the back door of the store opened, and Hammond came out, a fresh suit of clothes draped over his arm. He stopped at the top of the steps leading down to the ground.
Hello, Marshal.
What the hell do you think you're doing, Luther?
Why, doing business, of course.
With him?
His money spends just as well as anybody else's. I'm sorry, Marshal, but there ain't no law saying I can't sell a suit of clothes to an Indian.
Well, maybe not, but you had to know it would annoy the hell out of Thorne and his cronies if they caught a redskin in your store.
Listen, Thad, the only ones who set out to cause trouble here are Mitch Thorne and those other two hard cases who work for Garrard. If you got a problem with anybody, it ought to be with them.
Don't tell me how to do my job.
And don't try to tell me how to do mine.
You've been warned, Luther.
Calhoun turned to Smoke.
As for you, mister, I sure as hell hope you're just passing through Buffalo Flat because you ain't wanted here.
I just stopped by to buy some supplies.
Fine. Well, when you bought them, you'll ride on if you know it's good for you.
With that, Calhoun turned and stomped back up the alley, heading for the street. Smoke watched him go. Hammond came down the steps.
Take those filthy clothes off, Little Bear. You got money to pay for these?
Yes. And my name is Sander.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Your ma calls you one thing, and Crazy Bear calls you another. I reckon you're a Little Bear in the Crow Village and Sander here in town. Is that it?
The young man nodded as he stripped off the soiled coat. He dropped it on the ground at his feet and began unbuttoning his shirt. It wasn't as filthy as the coat and trousers were, but it stunk of horse droppings, too. He looked over at Smoke and nodded.
Thank you. There's no way of knowing what those men might have done if you hadn't intervened.
I'm sorry, Little Bear. Sander. It's just that I'm not used to hearing an Indian talk like that.
My mother made sure that I learned to speak English properly, as well as her native Romani.
Romani? You're part gypsy.
My mother is Rome. My father is Crow. Though my mother lives as a Crow woman would live, she has never forgotten her heritage. I was named after her father.
Folks need to remember where they come from.
Sander put on the clean clothes. Hammond looked down at the pile of filthy ones.
Yeah, I suppose burning's the best thing for them. Seems a shame, but I don't reckon I could ever get that smell out. Just leave them there for now, and I'll tend to them later.
He turned to Smoke.
You said you needed some supplies?
That's right.
Well, as soon as Sander here pays me, I'll be glad to help you.
My money is inside, in my pack.
All right, fine.
They entered the store through the rear door.
This town hasn't been here very long, has it?
Only about 6 months. It's growing by leaps and bounds. A fella named Bannerman brought a herd of cattle up from Texas and started a ranch not far from here. That prompted other stockmen to give it a try, and as they came in, the town followed. I heard about it, brought 3 wagon loads of goods up here, and set up my store in a tent, starting out. You can see how it's grown since then. Whole town's the same way. Things really took off when Jason Garrard started running stagecoaches between here and Casper. Nothing like a line of communication with the outside world to make a town grow.
Sander had taken some money from a beaded buckskin pouch. He laid it on the counter in front of Hammond.
This is for the suit.
Much obliged.
Garrard, that's the name of the fella those 3 troublemakers work for, isn't it?
That's right. Gus Harley and Earl Ballew are shotgun guards on his coaches. Mitch Thorne's what you'd call a troubleshooter, I guess. It's quite a ways from here to Casper, across a lot of open country where bandits could stop a stagecoach without much trouble. Thorne rides along sometimes to make sure the coach gets through.
Smoke turned to Sander.
Your pa's name is Crazy Bear?
That's right.
And he's a Crow chief?
Yes.
I think I've heard of him. An old friend of mine once told me about meeting up with a Crow chief called Crazy Bear. Said he was one of the biggest hombres he'd ever seen.
That is my father. Your friend probably said he was one of the ugliest men he'd ever seen, too.
Well, now that you mention it...
I take no offense at such a description. My father is ugly in the physical sense. but he is also the best man I have ever known. What is your friend's name?
He was called Preacher.
Preacher? Of course. I have heard my father speak many times of him and the way they rescued my mother from the bad men who had kidnapped her. Wait a minute. You said he was called Preacher?
He crossed the divide a while back.
Preacher's death was still too recent, too painful to dwell on.
I'm sorry. My father always spoke very highly of him. Perhaps you could ride by the village and tell him the news when you leave Buffalo Flat.
Why can't you tell him about it?
Because I am going the other way. I'm catching the next stage for Casper, and from there I will make my way on to Denver and eventually back east to college. My mother wishes me to have a white man's education.
Is that a fact?
Yes. Why do you think I need this suit of clothes?
I'll admit I hadn't spent a lot of time wondering about it. No offense, Sandor, but I've got my own chores to take care of. I reckon I could take the time to ride by your father's village and tell him about Preacher.
Good. It's about 10 miles northwest of here in the mountains.
Not far from Bannerman Circle B spread. There's a road out there now, so it ain't hard to find, Mr.
Just call me Buck.
All right, Buck. You said you needed some supplies?
Yeah, flour, salt, a little sugar if you got it, some Arbuckles.
How about some jerky?
Sure, usually comes in handy.
I'll start putting the order together. Be ready in half an hour or so. Are you riding on out today like Marshal Calhoun told you to?
Yeah, that depends. Is there a good hotel in town?
Well, there's a hotel. I can't say as how good it is. The Garrard House, a couple of blocks up the street.
Garrard. Same one who runs the stage line.
One and the same. He's got the livery stable, too. Not surprising, since he had to have a barn and corrals for his stage teams. I got a feeling he'd like to spread out into even more businesses.
Sounds like he's trying to take over the whole town.
You didn't hear that from me, Buck. I don't cotton to being pushed around, but I still got to live and work here. Between Thorne and his cronies and Marshal Calhoun, Mr. Garrard usually gets pretty much whatever he wants.
The lawman's in his pocket, eh?
Hammond shook his head, but he wasn't disagreeing with Smoke's assessment.
Yeah, you didn't hear that from me either.
When's the stage to Casper supposed to get here?
2 days from now, if it's on schedule.
You plan to stay in town until then?
I do. I've already said my farewells to my mother and father. I prefer not to go through that again.
Then I think I'll hang around Buffalo Flat for a while, too.
You don't have to stay here to protect me. I know it didn't look like it out there, but I can take care of myself, you know. My father is a Crow warrior, after all. The blood of fighting men runs in my veins.
Mine, too. But I've been on the trail quite a while. I wouldn't mind sleeping in a bed for a change.
Well, in that case... Anyway, I can't tell you what to do. Just be careful if you run into Thorne and his friends again. Thorne is very fast with a gun, and while the other two can't match his speed, they are killers, too.
Boy's right. You don't want to have any more trouble with those hombres.
No trouble. I'm a peaceable man.
Smoke checked into the hotel and went up to his room. He tossed his saddlebags on the bed. Then he leaned the Henry in a corner and looked around. Other than the bed with its iron bedstead, the room contained only a small table with a basin of water on it, a single ladder-back chair, and a ceramic thunder mug peeking out from under the bed. The floor was bare wood with not even a rug. The single window overlooked the street and had a paper shade that could be pulled down instead of a curtain. It was a simple utilitarian place, good only for sleeping. But since Smoke didn't plan on doing anything else, that was all right by him. The afternoon light had begun to fade as the sun lowered toward the Bighorns to the west, so he left the room. He wanted to tend to his horse before night fell. The stable was a large barn with a sign on it that read, Garrard Livery.
Hello?
A man came through a smaller side door.
Howdy. I was just over talking to the boss. Need to put up your horse?
That's right. I was supposed to tell you that I'm staying down at the hotel, too. Clerk there said something about that getting me a break on the price.
The hostler looked seven over.
Mister, I'd give you a break on the price just for the privilege of having a fine-looking appy like this in my barn.
I thought this was Gerard's place.
Well, yeah, it is. What I mean to say is, I'd give you that break if I owned this stable. What I can do is give you my word that I'll take mighty fine care of this big fella.
The hostler moved forward and raised a hand to pet Seven on the shoulder.
Best be careful. He can be a mite touchy.
One man horse, eh? Well, I'll handle him cautious like, but he'll still get the best care he can get in Buffalo Flat.
Thanks. My name's West. Buck West.
Wouldn't hurt to practice using his new name a little.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. West. I'm Hoyt Dowler. How long you plan on staying in these parts?
I'm not sure. Probably 2 or 3 days.
Give me a dollar and a half. That'll cover the bill for 3 days, seeing as you're staying at the hotel. If you stay longer, you can pay more then.
Take $2.
Sure. Anything else I can do for you?
You look like a man who enjoys a good meal.
Well, you could say that.
I'm told Clancy's is a good place to eat. What do you think?
Well, Seamus whips up a hell of a good Irish stew.
Well, that'll do for me. See you later, Hoyt.
So long, Buck.
Smoke turned toward the double doors, where he saw three figures standing in the opening, silhouetted by the fading light. With the glare of the setting sun behind him, he couldn't make out their faces, but that didn't matter. He recognized them by their shapes.
Oh, hell.
Hoyt, take my horse and put him in a stall. Then you better head back out that side door. You can unsaddle him and rub him down later.
But, Mr. West...
Just do as I say. It'll be all right.
Dowler grabbed Seven's reins and led the horse away along the aisle that ran down the center of the barn. Mitch Thorne, Earl Ballou, and Gus Harley sauntered a few steps into the building. Thorne was in front, with the other two a step back and flanking him.
West, is it? That's your name?
Buck West.
Well, I never heard of you, Buck West. And I reckon I heard about just about everybody west of Mississippi who's slick on the draw.
I never said I was slick on the draw.
Well, you act like you think you are, and that rubs me the wrong way.
Why should you care?
Because I'm the fastest gun around here, maybe in the whole territory, and my friends here are almost as fast.
Well, that's good to know.
Don't you want to find out if it's true?
Not particularly.
Well, you don't have a choice, mister. We gonna settle this right here and now.
Hold it!
A man strode into the barn through the side door that Hoyt Dowler had used earlier. The newcomer wore a brown tweed suit. He was short and wide and had a shock of graying red hair.
What's going on here, Mitch?
Nothing you need to be concerned with, boss.
I think it is.
The man had to be Jason Gerard.
I think you're about to kill this man, and we've had a talk about that.
Damn it, Mr. Gerard!
Buffalo Flat is a growing town. A lot of it is my town already, and more of it will be. But it'll stop growing if it gets a reputation as a place where a man can get shot for nothing.
It ain't nothing. This sumbitch horned in earlier and stuck up for that damn redskin when the boys and me threw him out of Hammond's store. And now just look at him, standing there like he thinks he's some sort of gun slick.
You let me worry about that. Once my store is established, he won't be around here for very long anyway. A man's got a right to bring his horse in and stable it. You can't shoot him just because you don't like his looks.
Well, then what can I do?
There are three of you and only one of him. Why don't you just give him a good beating and let it go at that?
Reckon I'd have something to say about whether or not any beatings are handed out.
Really? What are you going to do about it? If you go for your gun, my men will kill you. Even if you should happen to survive, you'll be dangling from a hang rope by morning. We've got a good tree for it right at the edge of town. The marshal and the judge would see to that.
So, you got the law on your side. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that sometimes, through no fault of his own, a man winds up on the wrong side of trouble. When that happens, friend, the smartest thing for him to do is minimize the damage. At least that way you can live through it. Tell you what I'll do. To make it up to you, there won't be any charge for your hotel room tonight or for stabling your horse. You can ride out of here in the morning without owing any money.
What if I don't want to leave in the morning?
Then I think you'd find that my hospitality and my patience have limits.
So what you want is for me to stand still for a beating to appease these hard cases of yours. And in return for it, you'll give me a free room in the hotel and a stall for my horse.
That's the deal. Take it or leave it.
I don't even get to fight back. What sort of ruckus is that?
Well, let him fight, boss. It won't do him any good.
You heard the man.
One condition. Dowler holds everybody's guns.
Fine with me. All right, fellas, give Dowler your guns.
What if it's a trick? What if this hombre slaps leather as soon as we're unarmed?
I'll hand over my weapons at the same time.
Sounds fair.
Dowler looked nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs, as the old saying went, while he collected the gun belts and holstered revolvers from Smoke, Thorn, Baloo, and Harley. Smoke backed into the center of the aisle to give himself some room to move as the three men advanced slowly toward him, spreading out so that they could come at him from different angles.
All right, have at it.
Let me have first crack at him, Mitch.
All right, Gus. Just leave a little so Earl and I can have some fun, too.
Harley charged like a bull straight at Smoke, but Smoke was ready for him. Smoke easily dodged the two punches, then put him to the ground with a momentous shot to the jaw. Earl Baloo was right behind Harley. Smoke bent to his right at the waist and brought his left leg up in a kick that buried his foot in Baloo's midsection. Harley and Baloo were out of the fight for a few minutes, but dealing with them left Smoke open to Thorn's attack. Harley rolled over and drove a boot heel into the back of Smoke's right knee. Harley was waiting for him. He wrapped his arms around Smoke's neck.
I got him, Mitch. Check him. Bust him up good.
Thorn moved in, swinging his right leg in a vicious kick aimed at Smoke's ribs. Before the kick could land, Smoke heaved himself into a roll that took Harley with him. The toe of Thorn's boot dug cruelly into the small of Harley's back instead. Thorn hurtled over Harley and tackled Smoke as he came to his feet. The gunman's arms went around Smoke's waist and bore him backward until Smoke crashed into one of the thick pillars that held up the barn's roof. Thorn began hammering punches into Smoke's body. Smoke grabbed the back of Thorn's neck and headbutted the gunman. The break only lasted a second before Harley came at him, swinging a roundhouse. Smoke ducked under it, and Harley's fist slammed into the thick wooden beam instead. Smoke brought a left uppercut from the ground. Baloo landed on Smoke's back and wrapped a chokehold around his neck.
Get him, Mitch, get him!
Smoke spun around and rammed Baloo into the wall of a stall. Smoke chopped the hard edge of his left hand against the spot where Baloo's neck joined his left shoulder.
You son of a bitch!
Smoke looked around in time to see the gunman yank a revolver from a holster in the armload of weapons that Hoyt Dowler held. As Thorn whirled toward him and the gun came around, Smoke's right hand dipped to his boot and came up with a dagger. The blade pierced Thorn's forearm. Thorn staggered back a step as his suddenly nerveless fingers opened and the gun dropped to the ground. Smoke saw that it was one of his own .44s. He scooped it up and covered Thorn, who stood cradling his bleeding arm.
Fight's over.
You had to use a weapon. You didn't abide by the terms of the agreement.
Thorn grabbed his gun first. If you're worried about our deal, I'll pay you for the damn hotel room and delivery charge.
Forget it. Your stay in Buffalo Flat is on me, West. In fact, I'll go you one better. I'll offer you a job.
A job? Boss, what are you talking about? Look what the bastard did to me.
Yeah, I see. I also know that you and those other two are supposed to be tough, but they're out cold and you've got a knife through your gun arm. West is still on his feet. I think I've been paying the wrong people.
You'll be wasting your money if you hire him, Gerard, because I'm going to kill him.
Your arm will have to heal up first. Well, how about it, West? You'd do well to hire on with me, because before I'm through, this whole corner of Wyoming territory is going to belong to me.
Take your job and put it where the sun don't shine, Gerard. Take your hotel and your livery stable and everything else you own and cram them in there too. I don't like any part of you or any of the rest of it.
You'd better tread carefully there, boy.
No. You best tread carefully. I've had my fill of men like you and your cheap gun hands. Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Dowler, but it looks like you're going to have to bring my horse back out. I'll stop by the hotel and get my gear, then find someplace else to stay.
All right. But I sure was looking forward to having that Appy around for a while.
You're making a bad mistake, West.
I don't think so.
I own the only hotel in town. Where are you going to sleep?
I'd sleep on a trash heap before I'd spend a night in your hotel, mister. Figure the smell would be better. Now that I've been around you and Thorn, it'll take a while to get the stink out of my nose.
Oh, you really are a dead man.
Reckon we'll see about that.
We sure as hell will.
Dowler led Seven back up the aisle from the stall where he'd put the Appaloosa earlier. He had buckled Smoke's gun belt and hung it from the saddle horn.
I'll get you $2.
I tell you to keep them for your trouble, but my poke's a little light right now.
Dowler gave him the $2. Smoke pocketed them, then backed toward the double doors.
Last chance to come to your senses. You got caught up in the excitement and said some things in the heat of the moment. I can understand that. I can even forgive it.
Not a chance in hell, Gerard. And if you're thinking that you'll send those three after me, you'll wind up having to replace them anyway. Because next time, I'll kill them.
Maybe you'd better not find another place to stay. Maybe you'd better just ride out of Buffalo Flat tonight and keep on going.
Don't get your hopes up. I'll be around for a while yet.
With that, he turned and walked away into the darkness that had fallen over the street. Smoke passed the stagecoach office and thought he saw movement on the porch. He kept going, and after a few yards, he was sure of it. When his pursuer closed in, Smoke stopped short and turned, moving fast as he brought the gun up.
Blast it, ma'am! You almost got your brains blown out. Didn't anybody ever tell you not to sneak up behind a fella like that?
I'm sorry, Mr. West, isn't it?
How do you know me?
I heard my father and those other men talking to you there in the barn.
Your father's Jason Gerard?
That's right. Don't worry, Mr. West. I'm not upset with you. I can't stand those awful gunmen who work for my father. I'm glad they didn't hurt you. My name is Robin Gerard.
Smoke shifted the Colt to his other hand, took her hand, and held it for a second. He couldn't help but notice her skin was cool and smooth, and her fingers were strong.
Buck West, ma'am.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. West.
Pleasure's all mine, ma'am.
Well, not hardly. I took great pleasure in seeing you wallop Mitch Thorn. He's my father's right-hand man, and he's got it in his head that he'll be even more than that someday by marrying me.
I take it that's not going to happen.
Not in a million years. I know you're looking for a place to stay. If you'd like, there's a little storage room in the school you can use. It's not much, but there's a cot in there, and it's fairly comfortable. The children sometimes use it to lie down if they don't feel well. I've napped on it before, too.
You're the teacher?
Oh, that's right. There's also a shed out back where you can put your mount. Some of the children have to ride in from out of town, and they put their horses there.
I'm obliged for the offer, ma'am. But why are you doing this? To get back at your pa?
My father and I disagree on many things, Mr. West, but I love him. I won't let that stand in the way of helping someone I think has been treated unfairly. If I just wanted to annoy Father, I'd make sure he knew what I was doing. But to tell the truth, I'd prefer he didn't find out about this. He's so wrapped up in his businesses, he never comes near the school, so I don't think there's much chance he'll know.
All right. I appreciate it, Miss Gerard. I'll get my gear from the hotel. Where's the school?
On the northern end of town, set back to the left from the trail. I'll go up there now and light a lantern so you'll be able to find it without any trouble.
I'm not sure a lady should be wandering around after dark by herself like that.
I'll be fine. I'm used to taking care of myself.
All right.
They parted company, Smoke heading up the street toward the hotel, while Robin crossed it at an angle. When he reached the hotel, Smoke holstered the Colt and buckled on the gun belt again. Smoke went inside to retrieve his saddlebags from his room and get his money back from the clerk. As he stepped out onto the porch, his instincts warned him. Smoke landed on his belly at the edge of the porch. Smoke rolled away from the shop. Smoke worked the Henry's lever as he rolled, and when he came to a stop, he aimed at the spot where he'd seen muzzle flashes. The rifle fire came from the entrance alcove of a darkened building across the street. He swung the Henry in that direction. Smoke rolled again under the elevated railing that ran along the edge of the porch. Smoke threw himself down behind the water trough, confident that its thick walls would stop any slugs that came his way.
What the hell's going on here? Who's doing all that shooting?
Smoke spotted Marshal Calhoun coming along the street, a shotgun clutched tightly in his hands.
Over here, Marshal. Take it easy with the greener. The ruckus seems to be over.
Calhoun swung the double barrel in the direction of Smoke's voice.
Who's there? Speak up, damn it, or I'll dust your hide with buckshot.
It's Buck West, Marshal.
Who?
The fella from Hammond's store this afternoon.
The one who stuck up for that redskin?
That's right.
What kind of trouble are you causing now, West?
I just stepped out of the hotel when a couple of hombres started shooting at me, Marshal. I don't think it was exactly me who caused the trouble.
You hit?
No, but you might look in the doorway at that building across the street. I think the fellow who was over there went through the glass in the door when I tagged him with my Henry.
Stand up where I can see you.
Smoke did so. Calhoun trained the twin muzzles of his shotgun on the doorway across the street as he walked toward it.
Glass is busted out, all right. Scattered all over the boardwalk. I don't see no wounded bushwhacker, however.
I guess he wasn't hurt bad enough to keep him from crawling away.
Smoke walked in front of the hotel toward the spot where the other man had lain in wait for him. As he passed the front window, he saw the clerk looking goggle-eyed at him. Smoke gave the man a grim smile. He fished out a match and lit it, then used the light from it to study the ground at the corner of the building. He saw a number of footprints in the dust, but dozens of people had walked along there during the day. The tracks were just a muddled mess. Calhoun came over to Smoke.
I'd ask you if you knew who took those shots at you, West. You're such a troublesome gent, it probably could have been anybody.
Or maybe it was Gus Harley and Earl Ballou.
Couldn't have been. Those boys were with me just a little while ago when the shooting started. They were filing a report about how you assaulted them and tried to kill Mitch Thorne with a knife. I'd be justified in taking you in and locking you up right now for attempted murder.
So that's how it is it?
Yeah, that's how it is.
Well then, you just go ahead and try to arrest me, Marshal.
Those fellas ain't said for sure if they want to press charges, so we'll let it go for now. Might be a wise thing for you to get out of town while the getting's good.
Folks keep telling me that, and I keep on not paying any attention to it.
Suit yourself. Whatever happens is on your head.
That's fine with me.
The marshal turned and stomped off down the street toward his office. Smoke watched him go, then turned to the hitch rail and jerked Seven's reins loose. He swung up into the saddle and rode north. Now, anyone keeping an eye on Smoke might think he was leaving town. When he reached the outskirts of the settlement, he turned to look for the lamp that Robin Garrard had said that she would light for him. Spotting a yellow glow in some trees, he headed for it and came up to a long, whitewashed building in a clearing. The door was open, letting the lamplight spill through it, and in its glow, Smoke saw a large bell hung from an iron post. That would be the school bell, he thought, with a faint smile. Robin would ring it every morning to summon her students to class. He dismounted, wrapped the reins around the post, and went up the two steps to the open door. As he looked through it, he saw the two people were in the school at the moment, both of them standing by the desk at the front of the room. They were so engrossed in what they were doing, they must not have heard him ride up. They were in each other's arms, mouths pressed together in a passionate kiss.
Oh.
The couple broke the kiss and sprang apart guiltily. He got his first good look at Robin Gerard, who was in her 20s and very pretty, with waves of red hair around her head and a dusting of freckles across her nose. Smoke got a good look at the man who'd been kissing her, but it wasn't the first time he'd seen that hombre. Sander, Little Bear, stared at Smoke in surprise.
Buck, what are you doing here?
Oh, Sandy, I hadn't had a chance to tell you yet.
Sandy, that's a good name for you.
The young man flushed a darker red than his usual coppery hue.
Tell me what?
That Mr. West is going to stay here tonight, too.
He is? Why?
Because he got in a big fight with Mitch Thorne and his cronies, and then my father threatened him. You can't blame Mr. West for not wanting to stay at the hotel.
No, I suppose not. You had trouble with those three again?
Again?
Buck here is the one who stepped in when Thorne and the others threw me out of Mr. Hammond's store this afternoon. I thought there was going to be a gunfight then and there, but Thorne backed down.
Yeah, that must have stuck in his craw. He and the other two caught up to me later on at the livery stable.
Father set all three of them on Mr. West. He told them to give him a good beating, but it was them who wound up taking the beating.
You should be careful. They will want to settle the score with you.
Yeah, I reckon they already tried that.
Those shots a little while ago. They tried to kill you.
I figure Harley and Baloo did anyway. Thorne's gun arm was hurt during the fight at the stable. I don't think he could have even handled a rifle.
But you weren't hurt?
No, I'm pretty sure I winged one of the men who bushwhacked me outside the hotel, and may have wounded the other one too, but they both got away. Marshal Calhoun claims it couldn't have been Harley or Baloo, because they were with him when the shooting started. But I don't think he's telling the truth.
You're right to feel that way. He's a terrible excuse for a lawman. He just does whatever my father tells him and lets Thorne and the others get away with doing anything they want.
Sandy turned to Robin and put his hands on her shoulders.
You should come back east with me. This is no place for you, whether your father is here or not.
He's all the family I have left, Sandy. I can't just desert him. Anyway, if I left Buffalo Flat, who would teach the children?
The town could get another teacher. If you came with me, we wouldn't have to hide the way we feel about each other.
Sandy shot a wary glance at Smoke.
You probably disapprove, too.
It's none of my business one way or the other. The best friend I ever had was an old mountain man who had plenty of Indian wives and a passel of kids by them. I don't see anything wrong with it being the other way around.
I don't want a lot of Indian husbands. Only one. A big family might be nice, though.
We can talk about that after I've gotten my education. I want to be able to provide properly for you.
I'd go and live in the Crow Village with you if that's what you wanted. I told you that.
No, you deserve better than that.
What could be better than being with the man I love?
Might be wise for the two of you not to do any courting in a well-lit room with an open door. You'd better blow that lamp out before you leave, Sandy.
I'm not leaving. Robin said I could stay here at the school until the stagecoach arrives day after tomorrow.
Smoke looked at Robin and raised an eyebrow.
I know. I'm sorry. When I asked you to stay here, Mr. West, I didn't think about the fact that I'd already promised the cot to Sandy.
Don't worry about it. You said there's a shed out back.
That's right.
Has it got any hay in it?
Yes, it does.
Well, then that's where I'll spread my bedroll. It'll still be more comfortable than the hard ground.
Are you sure you don't mind?
I'll be fine. I've slept in plenty of worse places.
All right. I am sorry, though.
Robin turned to Sandy.
I have to go. Father will be getting home soon, and he'll wonder where I am. We don't want him coming down here to look for me.
No, we don't.
I'll take my horse and go around back. Good night, you two.
Smoke awakened in the small shed the next morning. He got to his feet. As was his habit, he had woken early. The sun wasn't up yet, although the eastern sky was rosy with its approach. He saw a pump behind the school with a bucket hanging on its handle. It would feel good to dump a bucket of cold water over his head. He buckled on his gun belt before he stepped out of the shed. Smoke walked over to the pump and took the bucket from the handle. Holding it under the spigot, he began working the handle up and down. Smoke ran to the school's rear door. He drew his right hand Colt as he reached for the latch on the door and slapped it back. He jerked the door open. No lamps had been lit yet. Smoke hadn't even known that Robin was already there. But the front door stood wide open, letting dawn light the big main room. Robin struggled in the grip of a tall man with his right arm in a black sling. Smoke recognized him as Mitch Thorne.